Want to advertise your business in a cost-effective way? It's time to give podcast advertising a try. Research shows a high rate of podcast listeners made a purchase as a result of an ad they heard on a podcast. Visit podbean.com/brands to launch a cost-effective podcast advertising campaign in minutes. That's podbean.com/brands.
Welcome to Yolitics, the home of cold beer and hot takes on Texas politics.
All right, welcome to another episode of Yolitics. We've been talking about this for a couple of weeks now. Mm-hmm. This is a field trip. This is rare for us, but we hopped on a Southwest flight. We flew to San Antonio. We were at one of the coolest bars I've never been to in Texas, the St. Anthony Hotel Bar. And you walk in this place, it's like a time warp.
It is.
It's right there
in downtown San Antonio.
Three blocks from the Alamo.
Beautiful hotel. And then you walk back into this bar, and it is. It's a time capsule. It looks like it hasn't been touched in quite a while.
Yeah.
And this isn't random that we decided to come to this bar in this city, because something very extraordinary happened here many years ago. And it is still printed on the back of the bar
napkins
that they use here. The Bev Naps, as we used to call in the industry when I was a bartender.
You were a bartender, huh?
I was a bartender at one point. Different lifetime. And it's a triangle that's written on this napkin, and it's got Dallas, Houston, and San Antonio. And in the middle of the triangle, it says where it all began.
And this is where Southwest Airlines began, the largest domestic carrier in the United States. And let's get right to our guest. Gary Kelly, the CEO of Southwest, is here with us, having a water. We're going to actually crack open our Texas beers. We had to look at the list. And what are you having, man?
I'm having a Carbach, Crawford Bach, and it has the old Houston Astros jersey logo on it.
I love that logo. This is the Alamo Golden Ale, of course, from San Antonio. Can you say San Antonio, or is that...
No.
You can't?
San Antonio.
Yes. Gary, wouldn't you agree that that is a very country thing to call San Antonio San Antone?
It's just not correct.
And Gary's
from
here.
You can say Antonia. You know, you can kind of compress it like that, but San Antonio.
I love that we start a podcast like that.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm glad to be here with y'all.
Thank you.
We say y'all down here in San Antonio.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us. We appreciate the time with you. Have you been to this bar? Because this is the famous bar where Herb Kelleher and Roland King would come and brainstorm ideas on businesses and develop the idea of Southwest Airlines. You're from here. Did you ever roll into this place?
No, I never have. Now, remember, I grew up here, so I was in high school. So I'm not going to admit to you now that I was at the St. Anthony Bar when I was
You're retiring.
But, but I've been to the St. Anthony Hotel since, but not when I was living here as a youth.
And the reason that we bring up the beverage napkins here is because the story is that Herb Kelleher drew this up on the back of a napkin, the whole idea, the whole concept for Southwest Airlines, and it all started on the back of a napkin like so many amazing ideas over the years.
So he was the attorney for Roland King. Roland brought him this idea and asked him, you know, if he was interested in kind of doing pro bono legal services to help get the airplane off the ground, no pun intended. And the legend goes, Roland, you're crazy, let's do it. So, that's where it happened, right here at St. Anthony Hotel, and the rest is history.
And we take so much for granted, I think, you know, and we, you know, don't understand the importance of a Southwest Airlines because we've sort of grown up in this culture here. Back then, this was a revolutionary kind of radical idea, and it has changed how we travel.
Yeah, it was a big deal. And, you know, what they were taking advantage of was the intrastate commercial airline rules were different than interstate. And you could set your own schedules. You could set your own pricing. Because in those days, those things were regulated by the federal government. So you weren't free to add flights. You weren't free to price the flights the way you wanted to unless you were intrastate. Texas was big enough. California was big enough where they had intrastate ideas like that. But they had very low cost, they had great service, and, started out just serving three cities. And that was in 1971. They didn't even add a fourth city until 4 years later. It was 1975, and it was Harlingen.
And you guys just added 18 cities, pandemic began.
Year.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
Right.
But I was curious about the cocktail napkin. Did that really happen, or is that lore?
Well,
you know,
both of them have passed on. So,
who knows, right?
I have read that Rollins says it didn't happen, and Herb swears it did. So, my vote's with Herb. It's right here. It's on this napkin.
There it is.
So apparently it happened.
There it is.
And apparently it happened over a wild turkey.
Had to. That's right.
That's what Herb would drink. Let's get into some of the news of the day. You guys experienced some trouble earlier in the year with the staffing shortages. What happened in Florida? It really backed things up in the Southwest system. You've taken measures now as we go into the holidays to address that. You've cut flights. That gives you a wider margin with staffing. What are you concerned about as we go into the next 4 weeks? Anything, do you feel pretty confident with this plan, or is there anything still in the back that you're like, I really fingers crossed on this?
You know, I feel very confident in the plan. And I think the one caveat is what the three of us know, which is things are just different. You know, and we were humming right along pre-pandemic. And then there was a real shock to the system, or shock to the world. All the supply chains around the world are still not back in sync. And, you know, a lot of people have exited the workforce. And a lot of people that are in the workforce aren't working at to the same degree that they were before in terms of hours. So it's a very prevalent, it's not unique to Southwest or the airline industry, it's just throughout all sectors. So I think until we get some trends that we're all confident with, I think, there's a need to be cautious, and that's the way we're approaching this. So we were well planned coming into the year, and things just didn't work out, you know. So in the end, I was too aggressive with our flight schedule, so we've made some adjustments there. We're continuing to hire, but even the pace of hiring is not what we're accustomed to. It just takes triple the effort to land one new hire. So except for the people aspect of our business, other areas are running pretty well. In other words, we can buy jet fuel where we need it. We have access to airplanes where we need it. Our airports are operating smoothly. The TSA is doing a fine job. And for the most part, air traffic controllers are doing a very fine job. You know, so it's a big, broad, complicated ecosystem that all has to come together. And a lot of logistics, but I was very pleased with Thanksgiving. The month of November has been very, very solid, and I'm feeling good about where we go from here. The weather has been good.
That helps.
And weather has a huge effect on an airline.
The thing that stands out to me in that is the part where you say that it takes so much longer to get someone hired on and into the system. Southwest has been, you know, one of these best places to work for so long, and it's been a sought-after place for people to find employment. So, you know, if you guys are having problems, that really does speak to what's going on in the labor industry.
Yeah, and we're still a preferred employer. And we still have very enthusiastic new hires coming into the company. But there's just a smaller pool of candidates. And pilots are one thing, you know, so they're highly skilled and they're dedicated, obviously, to flying for airlines. Many other positions that we have, we're competing with other sectors. We're not just competing against other airlines for hiring. We're competing against Amazon or Home Depot or UPS, I mean, you name it. So there's millions of people out of the workforce that have not come back yet. There's probably a million different reasons why, but we just need to adjust and plan accordingly, and we've done that.
Southwest was doing terrific with leisure travel this summer, as everyone was. Then the Delta variant comes in, kind of messes things up, that stabilizes. Now Omicron is out there. What are you looking at to that? Does that concern you at all as we go into the these winter months here?
You know, I think you summed it up well. We were really encouraged with the, you know, advent of the vaccine, and then travel demand began to pick up in the spring, and we thought, all right, you know, we're on our way to getting this whole pandemic behind us. And so it's gone through waves. Oddly enough, there seems to be a wave every several months. It seems to last, you know, a little less than 2 months. So we've been of the mindset that we're going to get another wave here, because this thing is predictable in an unpredictable way, I guess you would say. But I think as time has gone by, the Delta variant did knock us off course somewhat, but it was so much better than a year ago. So in other words, I think people have sort of adjusted their mindset to living in an endemic instead of a pandemic. And yes, I do think another wave will dampen the demand, but nothing like what we saw in 2020. And the federal government messaging right now is, let's not panic. And I do think that that's helpful, because I think the worst thing that would happen for travel and tourism is the lockdowns and the shutdowns.
Not likely, though, is it, again?
It doesn't appear that it will be. I think most people have concluded that that didn't do much. It did more harm than it did good. And there's probably no one right answer in all of this, but I think the demand is going to be fine. It'll be impacted, clearly, if we have another surge in cases. The thing that we're mostly focused on is just making sure we pay attention to what we can control. Let's run a good operation. Let's make sure that we have proper staffing in place. Make sure we take good care of our people and in turn take good care of our customers. And I feel like we're well positioned to do that. We're just going to have to be more conservative in our plans for 2022 than I would like, because we have all kinds of things we want to do. We've got airplanes. We've got cash. We got the airport facilities in place. We just need to, you know, that fourth piece is we just need to make sure we have all the right people.
What do you want to do with the airplanes and the cash and the airports that you might not be able to get to?
Well, if you go back, you mentioned the 18 cities. So you go back pre-pandemic, we had far more departures a day between Dallas and San Antonio than what we have right now. So we would like to restore our flight frequencies, and especially in our business markets like a Dallas, San Antonio, to something close to where we were in 2019, let's say. What we've done is we've taken a lot of those frequencies out during the pandemic because you didn't need them. Right. I mean, there was just not demand.
No one was flying, yeah.
And we reallocated those airplanes to add these new destinations, mostly leisure-oriented, and at least we're putting idle assets to work. And we've added 18 great new destinations. I'll bet you that's 70 airplanes worth of flying. And so now that's what we'll do with the next 70 airplanes, in other words. We'll add flights back into our network and get that depth in place again. And it does a couple of things for us. It certainly provides more convenient flight times for travelers and puts more seats, you know, assuming that the demand is going to be there. And we do have to make a guess about that, but we think that it will. But when we do get into weather delays, having more flights is helpful in getting people where they want to go, because if you miss one flight, there's another one not too long afterwards. And we also, it puts us in a position where we also don't have to hold flights waiting on late arriving equipment. We can put that arriving passenger on a later flight. So it just gives us a lot better capabilities in terms of keeping the airline intact, the network intact, and keeping it more on time.
Yeah, beefing up that schedule certainly does make a difference. Since this is a political podcast, I want to venture into that realm just a little bit with you here and talk about what a lot of people call social responsibility. Southwest has spoken generally about things like voting rights, voting restrictions, that sort of thing. But some other airlines, some of your competitors, went further than Southwest did. There are people who say that you need to be using your heft at the table more in Austin. And then there are others like the lieutenant governor even who says that, you know, companies really ought to butt out. What is your take on that? And are there, do you have any regrets that you haven't pushed further than some of the competitors have?
No regrets. And I suppose I'm old school in this, but the way I look at it, we're trying to be welcoming to everybody. We're not just trying to serve Republicans. We're not just trying to serve Democrats. And you pick this side versus that side. And then, you know, what we try to do is the right thing. And sometimes that's in the eye of the beholder. So that's whether it's supporting our employees and various causes that they have, but we try to welcome everyone and serve everyone and treat everybody with respect. I think that that's the main thing that's missing from our society. It's you're either here or here, and there is no way to compromise or have any middle ground. Things that have that are germane to our business, absolutely we will weigh in. But look, we need to be focused on operating a safe and efficient and prosperous airline. That is the best way we can serve our communities. And that's been my philosophy. So there are things that, and ultimately we're all U.S. citizens and we all care about these things. But as you said, this is a podcast about politics. That's what we're talking about is politics. We're not politicians. We are an airline, and we're here to make sure that we take good care of our employees, who in turn we want to serve our customers exceptionally well.
How do we get beyond the divisiveness, though, do you think, Gary? Because you sent a message to employees, you know, suggesting, hey, let's, you know, do the golden rule, I believe were your words.
Right.
Treat others like you want to be treated. It just seems like the society has gotten into this spiral that we can't get out of.
Well, and one of my themes for years has been civility. And, you know, our country was founded on the notion of dissent. And, you know, we have disagreements, and yet we find a way as a country, as messy as it has been, to have a democracy, you know, for centuries now. And so I just think it really is the golden rule. It is treating people with respect. It's tolerating different views that you don't agree with. And unless people are willing to listen and think about a cause that's greater than just their own or themselves, we'll continue just, I think, to have arguments and not make any progress. So I think leadership would help. And I think promoting a discussion of ideas rather than name-calling would be a lot more productive. But it all, to me, it's just a matter of respect and civility.
There hasn't been a lot of civility or golden rule treatment when it comes to a lot of flight attendants this year, though. There's been a lot of violence in the skies. Do you think that the federal government needs to do more to stiffen the penalties, to make it... to make people think twice before doing something like that, because we just keep seeing it over and over again? Is that a cage you've been rattling with the federal government?
You know, just to establish the facts, what you say is accurate. There are more incidents. They are still very few. So just for a perspective, I fly all the time. I've yet to be on a flight where there was an issue. When there is an issue, it's very high profile, and they are up triple, quadruple, you know, in terms of numbers, but they don't number in the hundreds of thousands of incidents. So just as a perspective, the bad thing though is it puts everybody more on edge, because they just never know from one flight to the next what they're going to encounter. So I'm not for a minute trying to suggest that there's not an issue here, because there is. But the good news is the odds are heavily in one's favor that you're not going to have any problem or any misbehavior. But every day, we're going to have a dozen instances of, I'm going to call it a minor altercation, that just shouldn't be happening. You know, it just shouldn't be happening. And, you know, 2 years ago, it might be two. So, yeah, I do think that there's a possibility that we could do more as a country to prosecute these cases. I think the FAA has definitely stepped up in 2021, and I think that it would be logical to consider whether more could be done. One of the things that's being promoted by several of the airline unions is the notion of a no-fly list for customers. And that would have to be managed by the federal government. You know, it's not anything that we can easily... Because we're competitors, it's hard to share that information, and you have differing standards. So you have one airline who might have thousands of people on a no-fly list, and another airline in equivalent size, it might have 100, you know, so...
If the federal government could work out details on that, though, is that something that you would support, the idea of that?
I think anything that we can do to support our people and protect our customers... that is sensible would absolutely be very welcome. So far, I don't know. I haven't heard an idea or haven't come up with an idea that that is any better than what we're doing now, but it is a topic, and I think worthy of consideration, no question.
Gary, business travel has not come back to the numbers that you guys would want. You guys are working hard to try to expand the business offerings. I'm curious how much you think Zoom, video conferencing, how much has this changed the way businesses operate and whether they take those trips at the last minute and pay those fares that so many airlines like Southwest find so lucrative and need?
Well, I think it's changed things a lot. And
will it turn around at all? Do you think people will get tired of Zoom and want to go back to in person?
I think we'll begin to revert back to pre-pandemic, but I don't think anybody would be shocked if we never get there. It's one of these imponderables. Nobody really knows, and I'm one to prognosticate, things like that. All I can do really is plan, and so I think our folks are going to be conservative in assuming a business travel recovery. The other aspect of your question, Jason, to me is what are companies going to do in terms of returning to the office? So I think that also has an impact. In other words, if you have people that aren't in the office, there's no reason to travel to go see them because they're at home. So all of this is complicated, and I think most people are assuming that we might get back to maybe 80% of what it used to be.
How long, though?
5 years.
5 years?
It could be by the end of next year. I think within 5 years is a decent guess. The only frame of reference we really have to go on, and it's not a good one, is a recession. So businesses are very disciplined compared to consumers. So in a recession, if your profits are down, you start cutting costs. What's the first thing you cut? I'm going to cut travel. And maybe training and, the things that are considered to be discretionary. Well, it drops very sharply. And then on average, during a recession, it takes 5 years to recover to pre-recession levels. So as a rule of thumb, you could say, well, maybe this will take 5 years. But there's no law that says it won't be 10 years. I got to believe it never is a really long time. So eventually, I think business travel will return. But I just wouldn't put all of our chips on that. Now, in the meantime, selfishly for us, we have a new thrust into the big corporate managed travel markets, and I'm very excited about that. So the three legacy carriers have been the only ones playing in that space up to this point. And so now we've joined these global distribution systems and made it easy for the big corporates to book on Southwest.
That wasn't there before.
It was not there before. And even with that, we still had 35-40% of our customers were business travelers. So
even
I would argue
that,
we're the largest business business airline in the country, is my guess. And there's no way to know that for certain. But certainly not with the big corporates. So now I think we've got an opportunity to gain a higher percentage of business travelers than our competitors because it's a new source of customers for us.
But it takes a while to bring that business travel back, but at least you're working in that direction. Meantime, leisure travel has picked up pretty nicely this year. You mentioned the numbers over Thanksgiving and in November looking much better. You've had a couple of strong quarters. When do you think Southwest gets to the point where it is profitable on its own again without the need for the COVID-19 federal funds that have come along to help the airlines out?
Well, we had a profitable June. We had a profitable July. The Delta variant hurt us a lot relative to our profit target because we had a lot of seats out there. And had we been less aggressive, I think we would have had a better chance at profitability. On the other hand, if the Delta variant hadn't been there, I think we would have been handsomely profitable in the third quarter, I'm not trying to make an excuse, just trying to give you a sense of, hey, that's a pretty decent environment that we have to look forward to. So, I wouldn't give up on the fourth quarter here, being profitable. I don't think that was the more likely scenario coming into that. And next year, we're just going to have to see. It's really, again, as you've probably heard from us throughout the pandemic, it's the hardest time in my career to try to forecast anything because the world is just so unpredictable in so many different ways. But I think the best way to answer your question is I think we're close. And whether we hit it in the fourth quarter or the first quarter, obviously it's important, but they're the main thing that I'm focused on is let's run a good operation. Let's hit our staffing targets. Let's serve our customers well. The demand is, it's going to be there. And whether it's now or whether it's 3 months from now, is in the grand scheme of things not so important. But we're close.
You talked about the push for business travel, what you guys are doing to try to get the, you know, bring the corporations on board with the different computer systems. You talked about the number of increasing frequency between these major cities. What's the next big area of growth? Every time I see you, Gary, I think I ask you, are you going to start flying the 737 MAX 8 from New York to London or to South America? I mean, it has the range for it now. The MAX 8 clearly does. Is that something that you guys have thought about, or even South America?
The MAX 7 has even greater range.
Right.
It has, you know, basically the same engines in a smaller airplane. Well, what we've been talking about. We've added 18 destinations.
Domestic. Destination.
And we've got really boring stuff that needs to be done to restore our network. So we don't feel like we'll be adding any new cities for quite some time. It's as if we've accelerated all these new city openings. Some of them are pretty exciting. It may not be as exciting as London, but a lot of people are excited about Bozeman, Montana, and, you know, Sarasota, Florida, and Myrtle Beach, and a bunch of fun places. So eventually, we're at 121 destinations right now. We need to create depth in that existing network. Beyond that, I'll bet you there's 50 more cities that we can add to our route network.
In the U.S.?
In, I would say, North and South America. So okay. You asked about South America. I think South America is more realistic than London. I don't know that the 737 is the right equipment competitively, you know, in transatlantic markets. But we have so many things that we can do. The hard question for us is, how do you prioritize all of that? So we've gotten into Hawaii, and that was a big deal, and we've got a lot of capacity deployed there. So I'm really proud of that route network, and now it needs to develop and produce profits. Some of our other markets, again, we've added, but whether it's restoring, you know, previous frequencies or fully developing these new market opportunities, there's just work to be done there before we start adding a lot of new dots to the map.
Would the 7-3, if you guys do add new dots to the map, Gary, would the 7-3 be the aircraft to do that for, like, South America?
Yes.
It would be?
Yes.
I know you were talking about the Airbus 220, A220, earlier this year.
And we settled that question. So, in other words, when we announced our deal with Boeing
right.
in March, that settled the A220 question, because that was a deal for the MAX 7, which is the
right.
More or less equivalent or competitive aircraft to the Airbus. And I think that Boeing deal was one of the more important strategic moves that we've made, because that sets us on a good course here for the next 10 or 15 years. With all 737s.
That was 100 hard orders, is that right?
Firm more, orders? More than that, but I think the main thing is it's a commitment to that
the
MAX
7. Yeah,
MAX 7. And with, I think we'll have hundreds more 737s. We'll have, right now, our plan is for over 100 for next year.
Hmm. New ones?
New ones.
Net gains?
Well, gross purchases.
Okay.
And then we'll have some number of retirements net of that. But still, it's a bunch of airplanes.
Yeah, wow.
So it's well ahead of 100 airplanes.
Do you think you got a better deal with Boeing just because you even considered Airbus, though? They do say competition, you know, makes it better.
Always. Yeah, absolutely. The worst thing is to try to deal with a monopolist. And so, but the best thing for us right now is all Boeing, and that's where we ended up. So we ended up at a really good place. Boeing's happy, we're happy, and at some point we'll likely have something other than a Boeing 737. But the line of sight, again, for years, 50 more destinations, hundreds more airplanes, it's just way out there. So I like the fact that we're focused, and we have opportunities to continue doing our thing that we've been doing for 50 years. It's unfinished business, so to speak.
Gary, I want to ask you about high-speed rail. between Houston and Dallas. We just spoke to the CEO from that project not long ago. They want to base the fare for that fast train that's still being talked about on what you all charge to go between the cities. Is that a threat to Southwest Airlines? Is that something that the airline will push back really hard to keep from happening here in Texas?
Well, there's no reason for, you know, it's sort of the equivalent of saying if an airline wants to come in and add flights, would we push back on that? Well, of course not. I think what Herb Kelleher pushed back on in the 1980s was subsidized, you know, government-funded high-speed rail, and we'd push back on that or another airline being subsidized unfairly.
And so if they get, like, infrastructure money, that would be something that would bother.
Well, it has to be pro rata, you know, if you're going to, otherwise it's just unfair competition. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it works in Europe. I don't, you know, one would have to investigate whether it's profitable. You know, what I had always understood is that there wasn't a profitable high-speed rail system in the world. Mm-hmm. So you do have a long history of airline profitability, but I'm not informed on that. It's not an issue for us. Is it a competitive threat? The car is a competitive threat in that sense. So yeah, it would be it would definitely be something that we would have to pay attention to. But in terms of lobbying to prevent it, as long as it's fair and square, why, you know. That's what we're all about. I mean, people didn't like Southwest and tried to kill it in the early days, and that turned out to be a mistake on their part, you know. So, no, we're all for competition and very pro-consumer.
That Wright Amendment couldn't hold you down forever.
No.
Yeah.
No, and although we still have restrictions there, but that's okay. Yeah.
Gary, Southwest gave employees until November the 24th to get vaccinated or apply for an exemption. How many employees have done neither?
Well, now the deadline has been pushed, so it's we actually now have until January the 4th.
Okay.
By the federal government. So we've made excellent progress. We're not done, and so we've got some employees, it's in the single digits at least, who have not responded. But again, the deadline has now been moved to January 4th. So we still have some work to do.
You said you're not going to fire anybody over this. What would happen to those people if you can't get through to them, if they don't apply for an exemption, or if they don't get the vaccination? What happens to those single-digit employees?
Well, I think we just have to work through all of that. I think, worst case, you can't work. And if you can't work, you can't get paid. You know, would be there's a discipline process with our collective bargaining agreements that we go through these kinds of non-compliance issues. But what I'm striving to do is be patient with our people and get as many people vaccinated as we possibly can. I've consistently been on the record saying that is what our society needs to do. But at the same time, I don't feel like I should impose that on our employees. So it's being mandated by the federal government in order for us to remain a federal contractor. And that's a non-choice. We can't walk away from that. There's no way. And I'm not going to. So that's where it leaves us. And we've tried to be fair in evaluating the accommodation request for medical or religious reasons for an exemption. And there's just strongly held feelings about that. But, you know, there's some other companies that have taken the position like we have. And we haven't had a furlough or a layoff in 50 years. The last thing I want to do is have that happen because of this vaccine mandate.
You didn't even have it during the pandemic, the worst of the pandemic, which is extraordinary when you think about that. That has to be a big source of pride for you as
it
you
is.
Go around the state celebrating 50 years of never having to do that.
It is. And, you know, we, as a part of that, of course, we were successful. We were financially successful and had 47 consecutive years of profits. And you know, and here we are. So we can't, you know, you just can't lament the fact that we have a pandemic. But at least we were well prepared for it and have been able to fight our way through it.
Did you get close to layoffs? So how close did that get?
I don't think we would have ever had a layoff. I was concerned when, you know, at some point if the government isn't going to provide assistance, you just have to stop the bleeding. And so what I wanted us to do was, again, have everybody share in that sacrifice together. So we were in the process of negotiating with our unions to do that.
You gave up your salary too.
I you know, but that's what you do, you know. But fortunately, you know, the assistance came through. It helped all the airlines, probably arguably helped our competitors more than it helped us, because I think we were better prepared for this than anybody else was from a balance sheet perspective.
Did you ever think, man, we should have charged for baggage? We could have had all that extra money in the bank.
No.
Never crossed
You know,
your
because
mind.
I don't believe that that's true. I think that we actually generate more revenue through brand loyalty by not nickel and diming our customers. There was a period of time, you know, this started in 2008. There was a period of time where the industry kind of stood still with capacity. And you could actually measure the change in market share. It was one of the easier times to do that. And our share went up 2 percentage points. And we did nothing other than we didn't charge bag fees. And so another way to say it is, you know, it takes 5 bags to overcome one lost customer. And maybe today customers are more willing to pay them, but, you know, I think we're the one airline that that can make this case. Mm-hmm. And you just look at our, again, you look at our profit and revenue performance, and it supports my argument. But, you know, it just never hurts to lean towards a customer. Mm. And nobody likes to feel like they're getting a raw deal.
That's a great quote. Never hurts to lean towards a customer.
They're going
to
put that on a napkin, Gary.
Yeah, right. Here's my last question for you, Gary. Looking back at your time at Southwest and just your career in total, proudest moment and biggest regret?
Well, I think the proudest moment is what we've been talking about, just the fact that we've been able to make it 50 years, and especially here the pandemic, without a layoff or a furlough. So I certainly don't want to have that happen because somebody doesn't want to get vaccinated. You know, there's just a logical extension of that. And so we'll work hard to avoid that. Biggest regret, wow. You know, I guess human beings are sort of geared to not think that way. But we're aggressive by nature. And, you know, sometimes I probably got ahead of myself a little bit. I think, you know, the expansion this year, or, you know, trying to restore our flight activity. Yeah, I wish I had taken a more graduated, measured approach to that. And we had some initiatives in the past that were dependent upon some technology and didn't work. You know, so we had some airline partnerships as an example. But in the end, those kind of worked out okay as well, because we weren't going to serve Mexico. We still don't serve Canada, but eventually we plan to. So instead of having another airline partner with us, we're doing it ourselves. And I think, you know, that all worked out okay. But not too many regrets.
So you're done being CEO in February. Do you have your eye on maybe any other big jobs out there?
Well, I'm still going to have a big job, at least for Gary, and I'm going to be executive chairman at Southwest.
Mm-hmm. But nothing else?
I'll change my, you know, I don't want to add anything else right now, because I'd like to go deeper in the other things that I'm involved with, and but I also want to see what my new responsibilities are like. It's hard to be CEO and be truly strategic in terms of thinking about what's next around the corner. And our former president, Tom Nealon, who still works with Southwest, and I are going to do that. And I don't know if it's the Southwest venture capital kind of a thought, but it's just not been time or capacity to do those kinds of things.
Are you going
to
be at the place close here to San Antonio where you grew up? You moving?
No. I have 4 granddaughters in the Dallas area.
Oh,
which
they're going to keep you right
prohibit
there.
Prohibit that.
Yeah, right.
That's
my wife
for sure.
would never hear of that, and that would be a dumb idea on my part as well. But yeah, I'll spend more time at the ranch too. I've got lots of mesquite to eliminate.
to chop through.
I think I'd rather be in a boardroom than have to do all that. Gary, last thing from me. Do you have a Herb Kelleher story for us, a favorite from over the years?
Since we're at the bar, where it all began. Yeah.
Well, as it says on the napkin, where it all began.
Well, first of all, every story that you've ever heard about him is true, number one.
Which is stunning.
Oh, gosh. I won't use profanity here on your show because I know it's a family
show. Herb would, though. Herb probably would.
Yeah. But I'll tell you two quick stories. So one is I was chief financial officer at a very young age. And so after I'd been CFO for about 2 years, we were going to raise money for the first time. It was a big deal for me. So you go in those days, you go out and you do a road show, meaning, you know, you meet with the investors. And it's not the normal folks that you deal with. It's not the analysts. You're talking to, you know, the investors and big audiences. And I did most of that work myself. But on a deal like this, it involved the big guy. So, you know, and Herb and I spent a lot of time on the road together. So we go, and it's the very first meeting that we're having. This is early 1992. And the managing director of this firm out of Boston was a former Marine, and he made sure that you knew that. Mm-hmm. He had a very commanding presence. So we sit down, and we've got our investment banker on one side. I'm on the other, and Herb, I'm sitting next to Herb, and the Marine is at the head of the table. And I don't know, there's probably 30 people in the room. He goes, look, the SEC basically has rules for you to tell us what we need to know. And I want the truth. And I don't want any bull BS, okay? And I just my head was in my hands. Like this is going to be a disaster because everybody thinks that Herb is all fun and games, but he is more than willing to grab you by the shirt collar and punch you in the nose, you know? So I had no idea how he was going to react to this very direct demand. Wow. And all Herb said was, well, I've been rendered mute.
Really?
And that's all he said.
Wow.
And just everybody laughed, and it was all fun and games. Wow. And I asked him about that later. He said, oh, yeah, he and I became pen pals, and he was a good friend. And so it all worked
That's
out great.
Now, Herb Kelleher rendered mute.
Rendered mute,
yeah.
Which was not true, of course.
I didn't think, yeah, right.
But Herb and I would hunt together. Hmm. And I don't know why I deserved this, but I always ended up being his roommate.
Hmm.
And that is a sentence, let me tell you. So it was in some ways, because in other ways it wasn't so bad, because he would go to bed when the sun was coming up. So a lot of times you had the whole room
wow.
to yourself, you know. But
wow.
Yeah, he didn't show up one night, and we were in a cabin that had two other bedrooms in it, and I thought, well, and they were vacated that night, so I said, well, that was very considerate of him, you know, not to come in and wake me up.
Mm-hmm.
So I poked my head in bedroom number one, and that bed's made up. Nobody had slept there. So I go into bedroom number two. That has also not been slept in. I thought, oh, now I'm really toast. And Colleen Barrett is really, because I'm supposed to look out after him.
You're watching,
you know,
Herb, yeah.
You're keeping track
and
of
so
him.
So I go running for, you know, looking for him, and I find the ranch manager, and I said, have you seen Herb? He said, oh, yeah, he's over there having breakfast. Well, he was, sure enough, he stayed up all night. He had two hats on and was carrying on with General Jim McDivitt, who was Jeez. The commander of Gemini 8, you know.
Wow.
So we were on an industry event, and there are a lot of colorful stories about
Herb. What a character. You need to write a book.
Yeah, you should.
I know you'll have a book out right now for 50 years, but you need to write another book.
Gary, congratulations on retirement. We're honored that you were able to spend some time with us, and I'm stoked about being here at this bar, too. I've
a lot of history.
I didn't know that. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's great. Congratulations on all your successes, too.
Yeah,
since 2004,
run.
I mean, think about what all Southwest has become since 2004, and it's because of you, Gary.
Well, I think our people deserve all that credit. I appreciate you all saying that, and I love the work that you guys do, too. I'm big fans of
well
the two Jasons.
Thank you. We recorded that, right? We got that?
Yeah, we got it right.
Play that back for the boss.
Gary Hill's fantastic, man.
Yeah. Thank you all.